Today on Rambling About Tars, Volkswagen GTI loses the manual but gets ChatGPT. Dodge Durango gets last call special editions but will eventually lose the Hemi. Honda gets two weird concept cars. Mustang just gets totaled. No big surprise there. And we time traveled to the 70s for the first ever car branded video game. Friends, it's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Chris Bruce across the way. How you doing, man?
Hey, everyone. Doing okay. Pretty quiet week, all things. Well, I shouldn't say that. I've got bad news for the Rambling About Cars crew. Turns out the 300 ZX Turbo is not saveable. I didn't tell you. I've got it posted a few places as a parts car.
Bummer.
Yeah, it's not saveable, so we're just going to try to sell it for what it is and move on. Kind of honestly, so this actually happened last Wednesday, and
I was going to say before we jump into it, I think we need to hear the story as we let some of the ramblers kind of crawl into our internet
it. What's going on a local auction site, not an eBay or a Bring a Trailer or something like that. Like literally a local auctioneer. It looked really nice. It was being sold with some other cars that also looked very nice. I talked to my dad. He and I decided it'd be a fun father-son project, so we split the money on it and got it. He went and picked it up because it's closer to him than it is to me. Got, depending on who's talking, somewhere between 300 yards and mile and a half up the road, and the transmission conked out. And he had it towed back to our house. And then we were actually lucky enough, thankfully, to former guest and good friend of the show, Myron Vernis. He knows all about cars in northeastern Ohio, and he hooked us up with a fantastic mechanic in that area who specializes in vintage Japanese cars. Unfortunately, we took it there, and it's going to be a bigger project than we're willing to do. So
I mean, is it rusty, or is it just a lot of mechanical issues? What's going on?
So the engine itself is fine. The transmission obviously needs fixed. There's a bunch of issues with the front subframe and the front suspension. There's a little bit of rust underneath. From what I've heard, it's not like terrible, but from what I understand, a lot of the front subframe issues would take pretty extensive work to fix, is what I understand.
If it's not a lot of rust, though, I don't know, Ramblers. Maybe we should step in here and save this car for the Bruce crew.
No, I will tell you off the air what the estimate is to put it all back together, but it's more than what my dad and I want to spend, even if we split it in half. And so we just decided.
You're not doing any of the wrenching yourself. You were just going to have it all.
Right. We were going to have this expert do it.
That makes a big difference. You can run into some huge.
Right. Cause the thing there. One of the interesting things is that you cannot see the radiator on this car. Even if you pop the hood, it's at a very weird angle. And some of the issues we had were radiator issues. And so like getting to it, it was just going to be too much. And so, you know, he and I talked about it, and we're going to accept our losses. We still want some money for it, but we're going to end up probably losing money on the project, and that's okay.
Been there, done that, bailed out of a few cars in my time. So I feel your pain there. Just means you'll get a bigger and better one next time.
Exactly. And speaking of bigger and better, let's talk about the future of Honda, because Honda got weird on us this week. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that we had the teaser back in December of something wedgie shaped. And I mean, I guess it's a wedge, but it's,
I think it's a wedge.
It's not really a wedge. Tell us about it, Bruce. Let's not leave everybody in suspense here.
Sure. So I'm going to pull up a photo. I'm going to pull up a gallery of photos of it right now. At work, we can't help comparing it to a Dustbuster, the classic 80s Dustbuster, by the way. Like,
it's
that's the closest point of comparison I can come
that
up
with. That was the first thing. Yeah, that was the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw it. So I should point out
photos. Here it is from the side. Anyone who grew up in the 80s, that's a Dustbuster, right?
I mean, you need a little bit bigger, you know, on the back there. You need a handle on the back, but you put a handle on the back. What really gets me is the front. And we should point out, too, this is at CES this year in Las Vegas. Honda is there. Is. They debuted two concepts for their O series. Basically,
is it O series or Zero series? I thought it was Zero.
O series, Zero series, the Z series, maybe, depending on where you're at. O, Zero. Yeah, I guess we can call it the Zero series. It's their big step into full electrification. Post the GM breakup, if you will. And the vehicle we're talking about now is called the Saloon. This is the Saloon concept. We'll talk about the Space Hub in a minute.
Right. And I think you'll see some images of the Space Hub in here. So
yeah,
that
when,
is
when
the
you
one
see
that
something
looks
that looks
like van-ish. Yeah. Minivan-ish. That's the Space Hub. This one, this is the Saloon, and I gotta say, I love this damn car. I love the way this thing looks. It looks like cars from the 80s that I always wanted to exist. And spoiler alert, folks, Honda says a production vehicle that looks like this is coming in 2026.
Well, based on this, I struggle to see it looking like this. I'm gonna be honest. I'm not quite as enamored with this as you are. I was pretty optimistic when we got that teaser, but then the wedge at the front just kind of levels off and it stays there. And from some angles, it looks like an old Chevy Lumina APV minivan that's had the roof chopped, right? So a little slam there. It's got that big, just that big rectangular grill in the front, but being an EV, I mean, it's not going to be like a traditional grill. That's where I get the Dustbuster sense from, because it's pretty darn symmetrical. It's absolutely as wide as the car, and it just looks like it's ready to clean your couch.
So real quick, for anyone out there, I'm going to read specifically what Honda's press release says. And so you can agree with me, you can disagree with me, but to me, it sounds like whatever arrives in 2026 is going to look a little bit like this. They say, in 2026, Honda will introduce a model of the Honda Zero series based on the Saloon concept in North America, followed by model introductions in Japan, Asia, Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and South America. More information is available at zero.honda/en. So it's at least going to be based on this, you know, we can't.
Yeah. I mean, they're offering a preview. I mean, let's be honest. This has, it's a four seater inside. Yeah.
Like the production version is not going to have a gull wing door.
It's not
going to
have gull wing. It's not going to have a big gull wing door. Nobody does that except DeLorean, Bricklin, and then Tesla with their Model X. And even Tesla, I bet, is like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. So yeah, no. That's not going to happen. The weird wheels certainly aren't going to happen. Here's what I think. This will be toned down quite a bit before it goes into production. We'll see some styling cues. We'll see some design cues. If it is just like almost, if this is like one of those 90% versions, I will be shocked. If that's the case, and I'm putting this on the line here right now, Ramblers, you will all have to hold me to this if I am wrong. So that means 2025, 2026, 2027, whenever this might actually debut and we're still here, you're going to have to say, Smith, you were right. Or Smith, you were wrong. Now you're going to have to drink a shot of the hottest hot sauce that exists.
I think that's totally fair.
that's how confident I am that it will be pretty far removed from what we see here. But I mean, this is a great demonstrator. They have a full interior inside. It's not just a mock-up on the outside. They have a full interior inside. It's a minimalistic kind of approach. There's a yoke steering wheel because, I mean, that's, you know, because concept, right? It's a four-seater inside. We don't know anything. There are no details about the powertrain.
No mechanical details. No.
It's an EV, obviously. It's Honda's step into the full EV realm post their breakup with General Motors, since they're not going to be sharing components, namely the Ultium platform going forward. And it's pretty neat. I mean, the grill lights up like a graphic equalizer.
And I want to say real quick, so if for anyone watching on YouTube, we are watching Motor One's Own. This is Brett Evans, who has been on the show before. He is standing next to it. The images we were just showing, those are not renderings.
Yeah.
This is a car that is on display. You can walk up to it and touch it. Now, again, will the production version look like that? We don't know. But it exists at least in some physical form.
It does.
So we at least got to go from there.
Inside and out. I mean, they've got the gull wing doors open. You can see the gull wing doors right now in our little video. They are closing. We have shots of the interior. But yeah, no details on powertrain, no details on performance, no details on range. That will come eventually when Honda decides, hey, we're going to start talking about the version that you can buy that's based on this vehicle. Now, there is another Honda at CES, and it is called the Space Hub, and it's a minivan. Yes. Moving on to Volkswagen.
Let's look at the Space Hub for a second. That was
where you were supposed to jump in, Bruce, and be like, hey, no, wait a second.
And that's exactly what I did. Let's look at the Space Hub.
There isn't much information on the Space Hub.
There's far less information about the Space Hub than there is the Saloon.
Less than the Saloon. Obviously, nothing on powertrain. Honda has made no mention on whether this is going to be, based on something going into production, or if it's just a concept that's not going to go anywhere. There are some similar design cues. You have the big rectangular grill up front with the rectangular LED lights, the same grill that lights up that gives you that kind of wave motion. You have the same rear LED lights in a rectangular motif. So there are similar design cues. Obviously, the inside of this is much, what's a good word here? Cavernous?
Lounge-like? I mean, it's
pretty large inside. I mean, an EV, they've got lower floors. They've got a fairly tall ceiling. You have lounge seating that wraps around in the back.
Who missed it, the seating is there. You can see Brett sitting inside of it. This is not a production spec vehicle, just like the Saloon. It's going to change. Maybe this is an idea of the next gen Odyssey. Who knows? Maybe, possibly. You could kind of sort of see that if this is Honda's future design language, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, at least they're swinging for the fences. When was the last time you saw Honda really, really, really go for it like this?
I mean, I guess you could make that argument, but these concepts just aren't doing anything for me. I've been thinking about this since they debuted, because I mean, obviously we had a lot of talk about it in our team's chat, all of the Motor One crew, our larger family that we have nowadays. And there was a lot of discussion. Bruce, you immediately posted the picture of a Dustbuster and you beat me by 2 seconds on that, because I mean, you can't really ignore
just for anyone out there who doesn't know what a Dustbuster looks like.
I think I started by saying, oh, look, it's an anteater, because you've got that, just that big rectangular, just opening without any other real, maybe that's it. It just doesn't seem to have much character. You've got that big wide rectangular grill in the front, and it's just a wedge shape that then just goes straight back. I guess maybe I'm not getting much character from it. Maybe that's why I'm not really moved by either of these concepts. If the Saloon goes into production pretty close to this, I'm going to be a little disappointed, because I think it could be a little more exciting, a little more visually interesting, other than
just, you want, like, come just, on, just man. A big
this
dustbuster.
This is the promise of all of those concept drawings we saw in Motor Trend and Car and Driver back in the 80s and 90s. Like,
is it
they
though?
Always said, oh, it is, yes.
So if Honda designed a concept car in 2024, like a concept car from 1984?
That never got made. Yeah. I'm on board.
Maybe there's a reason it didn't get made. I'm just saying.
Okay. And I think that's a valid argument. If we want to talk about maybe there's a reason this stuff never got made, I think that's completely fair.
I don't know. I don't know, Ramblers. I mean, you need to chime in here. We've got our comments over here. We've got Group FBC, Eric Nefron. I see you guys over there, Ted Adam Green. Am I the only one that thinks this just doesn't really click any buttons?
The new and improved Pontiac Transport. Yeah, that's
that came up as well in our chat. Yeah. I think somebody posted a picture of the Transport.
That's the trio, the Transport, the Lumina APV, and the Oldsmobile Silhouette.
Oldsmobile Silhouette.
Yeah. They were all that same vehicle.
I want to see more distinguishing characteristics about this other than, hey, look,
I think it's very distinguishing.
Here's a rectangular front with a wedge nose, and we couldn't really decide what to do from there, so we just drew some kind of straight lines. Well, I see Group FBC says, yes, Smith, it's just you. So I will concede that I'm the only one in the room with a little bit of sense here. It's okay.
I think it's that same thing that when you get excited about an affordable car looking different, you know, you look at a lot of vehicles on the road and there are a lot of similar designs out there. I'm not saying every car on the road looks alike. I'm not going down that terrible, terrible argument rabbit hole. But there are certain similarities. And so when you see something like this that would be a potentially affordable vehicle that breaks out of the mold, to me, it gets me excited. It makes me interested. It makes me perk up my ears. Now, you know, as long as you and I have been doing this, how many concepts have we seen, Subaru? I'm kind of looking at you here, where you put out a really exciting looking concept and then you put out a vehicle that's not half as exciting as what your concept was. That happens a lot. And in all likelihood, that's probably what's going to happen here. But let me be excited for now. Let me get my hopes up for a moment and then
I'll let
my hopes be dashed.
Okay, Bruce, you can have your excitement for right now. And I just want to point out Ted Adam Green. Let me switch the comments there. It's like they smoothed the edges off the Cybertruck rejected design.
Ooh, bad take.
I actually had a little, I was thinking about that a little bit on this. It's like, you know, it has kind of the sharp lines in the front, but then it just kind of goes straight from there on back with a slight, very slight slope to the roof, but the lines aren't as sharp. It's still straight, but they aren't as sharp. And it's like, how hard would it be to just add some harder edges along the backside of the saloon, the concept here? And then how close would it be to a Cybertruck? And on that note, being different just for the sake of being different isn't always the right play. I see what you're saying there, but you want to be different. Right. You want to be different in a positive way. I know there are two camps on that in the media world, in the PR world. It's like, hey, any press is good press. And I say, no, not any press is good press.
True.
It's just having people talk about you is not the goal.
Right.
You don't want a bunch of negative crap. So,
but if you can do something that's different from your competitors and sets yourself apart, then I think there's a space for that as well. You know,
well, I mean, let's go to Hyundai here for an example, because we've talked about them a lot on the show.
Yeah, we have. And they've been knocking it out of the park in terms of styling and in terms of substance as well.
And they're kind of carving their own place. They are not looking like everybody else, but they're still bringing some very distinctive character to their products. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about, I know people might be a little tired at this point of the Envision 74, but I think about right off the bat. Okay, what do I love about that? That is really setting it apart from this saloon concept. Because
I'm going to interrupt you. Sorry, and I apologize real quick. But have you seen an Ioniq 5 on the road at all?
Yes.
To me, they immediately grab my attention because it's like retro and futuristic at the same time. And again, it looks like nothing else on the road. There's nothing. You look at that, and you're like, yeah, that's an Ioniq 5,
and it has some character and just some features that stand out to me that appeal to me in certain ways. I like the design of the front, the way they did the headlights, the way they just did some of the character resistance.
The rear as well is attractive.
The back, this concept, the saloon concept, it's just a freaking rectangle. It's like that's all it is up front. It's a rectangle. It's a rectangle with a steep rake angle that goes up to a windshield that has the same angle, and then it just goes. Then it's just solid from the back. But we're beating the dead horse here. We're beating the dead horse here. We'll I'm definitely seeing it a little differently.
Yeah, I think this is just one of those agree to disagree points where the thing is with any vehicle, literally any vehicle out there, the aesthetics are it's personal taste. It's why you can sell. Hell, go back to the six. It's why you could have a Mustang and a Camaro and a Charger or whatever, and you could sell all of those vehicles because they appealed to different people, either because of the powertrain or the way they looked or whatever. It's the same thing here. I personally like the way the Honda looks, but you cannot like the way the Honda looks, and there's still going to be other stuff out there for you.
And it's worth mentioning here, too, that Honda has a history of not necessarily trying to be the most exciting brand. We're just going to make some smart, reliable vehicles that can perform well for people. We've certainly seen that very, very often over the decades, and it's worked for them. And it's still working to this day. So, I mean, there's something to be said there. And, and let me take this opportunity really quick, since we're having a good discussion here. If you're catching us live, you're catching us right now on Motor One socials, on Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter, Motor One on YouTube. If you're catching us after the fact, if you're listening on audio, we still love you. We still love all of our audio listeners. We go up every Friday on like a dozen or so audio platforms, Spotify, Google, iHeartRadio, Podchaser. Yes, Group FBC, Deezer is included on that. And we have our email podcast at motorone.com. And please, if you're listening and you have a chance to check out the Honda concepts, the Zero Series concepts, there's the saloon, there's the Space Hub minivan. We kind of didn't really talk that much about the Space Hub minivan. I don't think anybody really finds that interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But email us your thoughts on those. Yeah. Podcast at Moto1.com. Email us your thoughts on those. Is Bruce right? Is it pretty interesting and cool? Is Smith right? Does it just leave you wanting more? Let us know. Podcast at Moto1.com.
Yeah,
and that goes for everything that we're going to talk about on this episode, which includes news from the world of Volkswagen. There was a little bit of a surprise here. Because
there was kind of a double surprise. There was a double whammy of a surprise. Let's hit the big news first, and then we'll hit. Well, I guess they're kind of both big news. Let's talk about first.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Bye-bye
no
manual.
Longer. Yeah. Bye-bye man. And this is kind of a worldwide thing. Volkswagen. Yep. If you want a GTI, you cannot get it with a manual gearbox anymore post the upcoming refresh, which we will be talking about in just a few short minutes.
And this came about not through a specific Volkswagen announcement, but rather, of course, Volkswagen is at CES right now. They have some other tech news that we're going to talk about in a minute. And Automotive News Europe had, I'll be honest, they got a pretty good get from Volkswagen asking about the manual when they said, nope, going forward here for the refreshed model, which should be coming here a little bit later this year. No more manual transmission option for the Golf. Of course, that includes the GTI. We don't get the Golf in the States anymore. Anyways, we only have the GTI.
And the Golf R.
And the Golf R, thank you. it will just be the dual clutch automatic only. So yep. the do it yourself.
That is not a US only crowd. Thing.
Yep.
This came from Automotive News Europe. This is also a European thing and presumably other markets around the world, because I would presume at that point that, you know, production limits, they wouldn't make them for other markets. We don't know, but that would make sense. But yeah, you're only going to be able to get a dual clutch automatic in your.
And I tell you what, our Ramblers, you do your homework, because Group FBC chimes in here right now in the comments. I was just about to say this. 5% global take rate on the manual. That's what Volkswagen was saying they were seeing here with the Golf on a global level, 5% take rate for the manual.
Yeah.
95%. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I think it's a no-brainer. Right. When you see those kind of numbers, you've got to make the smart play. Although in the United States, the take rate for manual GTIs was more like 50%.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember offhand what the GTI sales were in 2023. But I mean, I think we're talking under, I think it was like 8,900 or something, or 9,000. Not a big seller. 50% makes it sound pretty significant. And I mean, it is. When half of your lineup is going for a manual, I mean, that matters. But it doesn't matter enough in the big picture. So automatic only going forward. When is that going to happen? Well, that's some of the other interesting unofficial kind of news that we have on Volkswagen, because they went to CES. Okay. CES is a technology show, right,
Bruce? Can I interrupt you just for a hot second here?
Sure.
Because I've got the numbers right here. So total GTI sales in the US last year was 7,451 units.
Okay, not as many as I thought.
And then total Golf R sales was 3,238 units. So both of those were actually up. GTI sales were up 7.6%, and Golf R sales were up 116%, but when you're up 116% and the total is still 3,240 units, it's not really moving the needle.
And in the global scale, it obviously makes sense. It obviously makes sense. But Volkswagen,
anyway, I interrupted you. Continue with your point.
No, that's fine. They went to CES with tech news that we're going to talk about in just a minute. But they snuck in an unofficial reveal of their updated interior for the facelifted Golf that should debut later this year. They didn't tell anybody about it. It was just shown in photos for their announcement that, hey, Volkswagen globally will include ChatGPT AI chatting software in select Volkswagen models, basically their ID lineup, the Passat, the Golf. This is on, I want to stress, this is for global markets right now outside the United States. But with that little tidbit of tech information, they showed some photos. One of the photos was showing somebody asking a question and it showing up on the infotainment screen. It was like, well, wait a minute, that screen looks a little different. And then we look at the steering wheel and it's like,
Steering wheels.
The steering wheel's different. There are some buttons back on the steering wheel. So we actually got it, and I pinged Volkswagen. It's like, do you have any official announcements on the interior? And they were like, no. They were just like, no. Is there any other news?
Buttons there, guys.
Is there any other news on Volkswagen coming out of CES? No. No, we're focusing on ChatGPT right now, which, by the way, will work in the background with VW's audio system, infotainment system that's already in place.
I still don't understand what you do with that, if I'm totally honest. I know we had this discussion at work, but I didn't want to be the stupid guy in chat and be like, what does ChatGPT do in your car? I'm not being an a-hole here. I legit don't quite get it.
So here's what Volkswagen said in their press release. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm just paraphrasing here from what I remember. Of course, there are voice functions in the GTI right now where, okay, you push a button and you ask it, you know, you know, navigation directions or something.
Right.
From what Volkswagen says, ChatGPT will work as a supplement to the system that's already installed. So if you ask a question and it doesn't know what to do, and it's, you know, instead of say, I don't know what it does. If you ask it something and it doesn't know what to do, I don't know if it says, you know, check our menu for these options. No, at that point, ChatGPT. I told you, Bruce, I was going to say GTP at some point.
You did.
ChatGPT would then step in and basically answer the question, but it will still use Volkswagen's voice, you know, the built-in voice, all of that. So it will sound the same. It functions the same. Only now, presumably, you can ask, what's the fastest animal in the world? And the system will say, ooh, I don't know that. And then ChatGPT will say, okay, let me connect and then we'll have a conversation to tell you all these things. Volkswagen says in their press release that you can ask virtually any question with this system now and have it answered.
Am I old for not finding a use for that? Am I just like out of touch? To quote Simpsons, did the children get, am I out of touch or are the children losing it? Like, I'm not going to
dump on it until I have a chance to use it and see what it's like. And I haven't really even used ChatGPT. I have to consciously say GPT now.
I haven't used it at all because I think it's unethical to use it for work.
Yeah, I mean, I've checked into it to see what it's like a little bit, but I haven't really done much with it. I'm with you on that. It's not ethical for what we're doing. But before I dump on it, I would want to see, okay, what, you know, is this going to offer something extra? If, for example, let's say, I mean, here's a possible hypothetical situation where it could work out.
Okay, tell me.
I'm driving my GTI and yep. I need directions to some specific landmark or some event, and maybe it's something newer, and I push the button and
Waze will do that for me now,
and Volkswagen's assistant will go through and not have an answer or not understand, or maybe I'm using a different term, maybe a slang term, and I'm not aware that there's another official term. Maybe it's a racetrack. Maybe it's a racetrack or something where, hey, I need directions to the Indy 500. And Volkswagen's assistant would be like, we do not have a location for Indy 500. Here are possible alternatives. Maybe then ChatGPT can step in with its, in theory, wider artificial neural net here. We're getting into Skynet land and recognize, okay, Indy 500. Are you talking about the Indianapolis 500 Motor Speedway? We could probably take you here. And then it in theory would communicate in a more chat friendly voice. I mean that I'm just pulling this completely out of my backside because this is a fresh announcement. It's not going to be implemented in vehicles until later this year, and it's going to start in Europe. Right. They're still going through approval processes for the US. I mean, that's a theoretical situation where maybe it can come in.
Let's celebrate buttons on the steering wheel and go from there, because again, without trying it, you're right. Like, because I will say, like, I have used Siri in my car with Apple CarPlay, and I found it useful because it's hands-free. I listen to a lot of podcasts while driving, and I use it to skip through ads.
But
I'll be totally honest.
But I just say,
hey, Siri, skip 3 minutes ahead, and I'm back in my podcast. Like, it's
but great. I have Siri as well. I don't use it in my car, but I have my iPad with Siri. And more often than not, I'm a little surprised if I ask a question and instead of just getting a straight answer, Oh, here are the results that I found on the internet for blank. Maybe that's where ChatGPT comes in. And instead of saying, here are the results I found for this, just saying, okay, so we looked this up and I have no idea what you're talking about, but maybe you're thinking about Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
And instead of just putting up a generic list, okay, here's a generic list, but maybe he's meaning this. So you say, okay, yes, take me there. I mean, that's
sure
a theoretical situation. In my article, in my post on this, I also brought up the possibility. I mean, could you sit across from a bank and then ask your car, how many armed guards are in there? And should you be worried about that? Because Volkswagen says, hey, data, this is a very secure system because ChatGPT never connects to any personal information. And every question you ask is deleted right after you ask it. Air quotes.
So, Smith, are you suggesting, because let's be honest here, Michael Mann is working on Heat 2 right now. He wrote the book, film adaptation's coming out. Are you saying that in Heat 2, you might be able to use your car to help spy on a bank before you rob it?
I'm saying nothing of the sort. I'm just using an example that came to my mind of things, because Volkswagen says there is virtually nothing that you won't be able to answer, that this system won't be able to answer. You'll be able to ask virtually every question and get some sort of answer.
Okay. I just want to pull it up and just say, what is the meaning of life? And just let it like sit there and cook for a while.
Hey, let's go for it. Let's see what happens. In the meantime, we can play with those fancy buttons that are back on the steering wheel. It doesn't look like an entirely haptic free scenario. It looks like the climate and headlight controls are still haptic, but I think a lot of the frustration that people had was just with it, like especially with the radio controls and things. There are buttons back on the wheel, and that touchscreen looks a little bit bigger. It looks like maybe it's coming from the ID7.
And you and I have discussed this before. The issue with haptic buttons is that in cold weather, they suck, because a lot of people drive with gloves on in cold weather, and they, unless you have special gloves with, you
which
know,
I do.
Okay. I do not.
And to be fair, I still have issues using them on touch screens. But I do have special gloves that I drive with. When I went to Chicago over Christmas, over the holiday, it was a little annoying at times when I'm trying to use the touch screen. I've got my gloves on. The car didn't have heated steering wheel, but it did have heated seats, so I could just stay nice and toasty in the car. But I couldn't. I struggled then to try to use the touch screen with my gloves on. But so yeah,
I'm with you on that. They were designed by an engineer who never lived in a winter climate. Like, some guy in Southern California designed them, and it's never seen snow. And they're just bad. They're bad.
Speaking of which, can we have just a short discussion on technology and cars?
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Because CES, I mean, obviously in the last few years, CES traditionally was an electronic show, and as we have more vehicles with just ever increasing levels of technology, automakers started to get involved. So this is a great time for automakers to showcase some of their new tech. And we're talking about ChatGPT in cars here with Volkswagens. But I mean, Mercedes was there talking about some of their new tech. Hyundai was there. I think Infiniti was there. Lamborghini was talking about like some new telemetry,
augmented tech reality telemetry.
That it's in development. It's not ready for prime time yet. That does everything from monitor track times and G forces and all that to biometric sensors. So You can visually see how exciting it is to drive your Lamborghini when your heart rate goes. I mean, just
that's the
just gobs of tech. And yeah, I think it was BMW that they were there with some of their augmented tech where you could drive around with glasses on.
Yeah,
and you had like an augmented.
They've already introduced that for motorcycles, but they're working on it for cars. And Smith, just real quick, I want to say, you and I talked about this. We were trying to keep the show shorter. We're at 40 minutes. We have We have three topics left to go.
Yeah, but those are gonna go. Those are gonna go pretty quick. You know that.
Okay.
I got to get this off my chest, and I want to engage the ramblers here. At what point do we have too much tech, and are we already there? And I bring this up because I'll jump back really quick to my trip to Chicago over the holidays. Yep. I had a car that didn't have a lot of features on it, and
you had a Kia. Am I
wrong? I had a Kia, a basic Kia. Didn't have a lot of features.
The model. On it. We're not gonna like.
It was a new Kia Rio.
Okay, it was a Kia Rio.
Didn't have a lot of features on it. But I found I didn't miss anything.
Okay.
I had my phone plugged in for Android Auto. Mm-hmm. And it didn't have a tiny touch screen, but it didn't have a huge touch screen. But it was easy to access when I wasn't wearing gloves. Mm-hmm. And I didn't miss a thing. I didn't need anything else. I didn't particularly want anything else. I had my phone right there with navigation that I needed if I needed it. It was all going through the car system. And I didn't need to download any games. I didn't need to have
that's
any.
That's a whole discussion. That's a whole topic.
I didn't need to have any web conferences. And if I did, I mean, I suppose I could try to do that through my phone. I won't confirm or deny any apps on my phone that let me access a lot of other features to play through a vehicle's infotainment screen.
Go ahead and call out what you mean because I'm not sure what you mean.
That I never use. I have some apps where we could watch some YouTube videos that play through the phone.
Okay.
That I wouldn't be able to normally access otherwise.
But
especially keeps my passenger entertained.
Right. You were there with your wife and your parents. So you would not be doing that behind the wheel. You would hand the phone off to your wife or your mom or your dad or whomever, and they might control that stuff. And
well, once you have Android Auto hooked in or Apple CarPlay, it's all controlled through the touchscreen right there. So, I mean, it's hands off on the phone altogether. There are still features that are blocked unless you're in park. But I mean, it occurred to me, This is really all you need. And I know we're talking about needs versus wants versus, oh, this is neat to be able to do this. Are we at, or have we passed the point where it's just like enough is enough? Mm-hmm. These are cars. These aren't mobile entertainment centers for your pleasure. If you have an SUV, your kids are going to be in the back with their phones or their tablets. Do you need 10-inch screens on every seat with a gaggle of things for them to download? Do you need all of that extra cost baked into the vehicle? Do you need all of these things that just have absolutely nothing to do with driving? And I know I sound like just the angry old man telling people to get off the lawn, which, by the way, you can walk across my lawn. That's fine.
It's people full of walk snow across. Right now, so wear boots.
It's full of snow. You can snowmobile across my yard right now. And in fact, they probably already are at this point because this is the first big snow of the year. But I'm tired of what to me feels like just bragging rights, like saying, hey, my truck can tow 25,000 pounds. Who cares? You're never going to do it. Look, I can download 150 different interesting little games to plug into my infotainment system while shopping for something in my car. But you can't do it while you're driving. You can only do it when parked for safety reasons. Okay, so I don't know, if I'm parked, say, at my house, I'm probably going to go inside and shop on my computer or my phone. Or, hey, you know what? Let's go shopping. Let's park in the mall parking lot. We'll sit out here and we'll browse what's at the store. We'll buy it through the car, then walk in and pick it up. No, this is dumb. This is dumb, people.
So
we've passed the point.
This is an argument from former Motor One managing editor Brandon Turkus that he made, and I think he's absolutely right. He was complaining about the passenger side screens on, I believe he was specifically talking about one of the Mercedes models, but it's also available in the Porsche Taycan, and I think maybe now the Panamera as well. But he was basically just saying how useless it is, because if someone is sitting in the passenger seat, they're just going to pull out their own phone that has all of their own apps, that they're logged into all of their own stuff already, and look at their phone rather than needing to do all of that on the screen in front of them. Because again, your phone, it's, you know, it's personalized to you in a certain way. You've got your passwords, your logins, your favorites, your apps, your everything. And it's right. Everyone has a phone with them all the time these days. And so it's kind of insane in a certain way to put a screen that's another inch ahead of them on the center on the passenger side dashboard. It's
the only way I see that being useful is when you are either connected through CarPlay or Android, or you're using the vehicle's built-in navigation or something where the passenger can jump in and assist, and it's convenient to have it right there in front of them instead of reaching another 5 inches to the left.
Which still is
kind of a sketchy argument. I mean, let's be honest. Automakers want to sell people all kinds of stuff, and this is a way to do it. Hey, let's put extra screens in here with all of these apps. You can download all of this stuff. And I think there's an idea in the back of a lot of their minds of eventually we'll get away from Android Auto, Apple CarPlay. We'll have our own systems that people will then have to subscribe to use, bringing more money in. We've seen that already with General Motors dropping Android Auto and CarPlay.
We're seeing
it seems to be failing big time. There's a lot of pushback, and I feel pretty darn confident that other automakers are watching and seeing this pushback, and now they're kind of like, okay, pulling back a little bit. Maybe this will come in the future, but not right now. And maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing, a little bit of these systems that were developed at a point where, hey, you know what it looks like? We're just going to have our own systems. We'll move away from Android Auto, Apple CarPlay. And it's just kind of not the case. And I just want to share a few of the comments here. Eric Nefron agreed. I appreciate that. Pilf JD, this is what we call feature creep.
That's a cute dog, by the way.
Lovely dog. Group FBC, in terms of usefulness and being genuine improvements, Tech and Cars has already jumped the shark. Ted Adam Green, this is why I want an ND2 Miata RF. It has the right balance for me, similar to my current 2019 Veloster. So I'm getting the sense that a lot of people feel similar, which makes me feel less old. And I appreciate that. I always love feeling less old. Oof, group Smith. FBC, cough, Blazer, EV, stop sale.
Smith, we need to keep the show rolling.
We're going to keep rolling.
Keep these shows shorter, despite that sidebar. But
yeah. Well, hey, it needed to happen.
You did all of the work on, so I think you need to present. And that is the insane story of a Ford Mustang that crashed into the side of a building in Indiana. If anyone's watching on YouTube, it really crashed into the side of a building. We're not talking about like at normal, like hip waist car height. We're talking about a good, that's every bit of 4 feet.
I don't think it's quite that high, but yeah. In this instance, it caught her eye because I'm thinking that's maybe probably around 3 feet. I mean, consider. Okay. I mean, look at the rear tire. How tall is that rear tire?
That's probably from ground up. Probably 18.
Probably 18? This is a sixth gen Mustang GT. So that's probably two feet, maybe two and a half feet. And it looks like there's about another tire space beneath that, wouldn't you say?
There's every bit of another tire space.
That was how I gauged it. So probably between two and three feet somewhere in there. Point being, it's off the ground. And the photos were caught our eye because, okay, one, it's in the side of a building, never a good thing. Two, it's off the ground by at least a couple feet. And it just looks like it's very neatly placed. Almost like somebody picked it up on a forklift and just kind of drove a little too far. I want to say, as far as we know, no serious injuries. The driver was trapped in the car because you're in the side of a building pretty much halfway. And it's a nice, neat fit. So the doors are not opening because there are walls on either side. But the driver was able to get himself out of the car. He went to hospital to just be checked out. There were no reports of anybody that was hurt inside. I will say this happened in Indianapolis, Indiana on last Friday, I believe it was. I can't remember the specific day. I think it's January 5th, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds true.
We had a lot of questions. This happened in Indianapolis on the southeast side. Ironically, it happened on Shelby Street, even though this is not a Shelby Mustang. So a little irony in there. There's a pretty steep embankment that goes up to the side of the house. The Mustang clearly hit that embankment. And it also looks like there might be some sort of platform inside, a raised floor, because the Mustang is sitting nice and neat on that
platform. Well, yeah, it's got a raised foundation on the house
We had a lot of questions. Indianapolis Fire Department posted photos on its Facebook page. And it said, hey, the investigation was underway through the Indianapolis police. So I called the Indianapolis police to see, okay, do we have any follow-up?
Clearly, because the Indianapolis Metro Police were there.
Yeah. There's a picture right there. I was a little surprised because I finally got a hold of a public relations officer. And I asked, okay, there's this crash, this Mustang that was being investigated. And immediately he was like, I don't know what you mean. I was like, okay, January 5th, the Mustang, it was a Mustang that crashed through a house. The fire department said that the police was investigating. Just wondering if there was anything to add here, what happened? He's like, we have no information. It's like snap, like, okay, either this happened to somebody of some prominence, or they're just kind of tired of getting a bunch of calls. Cause look, here's another crazy Mustang that crashed into a house, but for any reason, no information from the police. Tried to follow up with the fire department. And they were like, yeah, the police are investigating. Yeah. I'm aware of that. So unfortunately we were only left with the photos. Obviously the car left the road for some reason, hit that embankment, launched into the house. And it's possible that the house actually picked up the front of that car. It may not have, I don't know that it jumped that high, because when you look at the bank, I mean, there are some pretty clear scuff marks going up that bank where the Mustang was down most of its trip upward. What's really interesting to me though, and we're looking at an image of it right now, that passenger rear quarter panel is
already dented. That had to happen beforehand.
That did not happen when it hit the house. No. It had to have happened before. So what hit the side, the rear quarter of this Mustang? And is that what sent it into the building? There was no mention of any other cars involved in the crash. When you bring this up on Google Maps, Shelby Street, it's a very wide street. It's a very straight street. I mean, and I couldn't see anything right off the bat that would point me in the direction of, okay, he slid sideways, hit this, pushed him over. Yeah, just a mystery, a kind of a weird mystery. But We can't ignore a Mustang neatly into the side of a building. I mean, this was a terrible day for somebody. This was a really rough day for somebody. We're glad that no reports of any big injuries. The driver did go to the hospital.
There were no injuries. Yeah. But Smith, I just want to make this point here with this image right here. It happened on Shelby Street. Can you imagine if this was a 2001 Shelby Mustang? How good would this image have been?
Well, there is no 2001 Shelby Mustang, so it would never happen. But if it had been a 2011...
My journalist mind, yeah. Like my headline writer mind.
2001 Mustang Shelby crashes into 2001 Shelby Street. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
There's some... Well, you know what? There's the... Okay, 2001. There's got to be a 2011 on that street somewhere. Possibly, right?
Presumably.
We'll just get a 2011. Houses
down the road.
we'll get a 2011 and we'll just crash it into that house, right?
But yeah, it was a wild incident.
Interesting.
You discovered this. You really tried to get stuff from the police. Like you put in the legwork, and the Indianapolis police were not happy to talk with you. So
I have lots of friends that are police officers. It's a tough
job. I'm not judging the police.
There are good people and bad people in every profession. I was a little disappointed in how difficult it was to try to reach somebody, because I'm looking on their website and the first number I called I tried to call the Southeast District, because this took place in Southeast Indianapolis. I tried to call the Southeast District and it wasn't even the number for the Southeast District. It was like some generic municipality recording that I got. And it's like, well, this isn't even the police department listed on their police department's website. So, I mean, it took a little bit. I was a little disappointed that it was that difficult to try to reach somebody. And then, I mean, there wasn't any, hey, let me check into this. Let me see. It's just, no.
Yeah.
So life as a journalist, man. Yep. Moving on. Let's go pretty quick. We've got a new Dodge Durango, last call edition.
Last call edition.
There will be more, but the first one just dropped. They conveniently timed this with CES, but this is not related to CES at all. There's nothing tech going on here. If you remember last year, the last call editions of the Dodge Challenger, the Dodge Charger celebrated the end of the line for those vehicles and the Hemi engine. The same thing is going to happen this year with the Durango. And it starts here with the SRT 392 Alchemy.
Okay. I was curious how you were going to do that.
Do you get it? Alchemy. Alchemy. If you don't know what alchemy is, it's like the medieval thing of turning metals into gold.
Lead into gold. Yeah.
If
for anyone who doesn't know, go watch. I'm pretty sure it's free on most streaming services. Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis. It's all about alchemy. It's a terrible action movie, and you will love it because it's hilarious.
I haven't heard Hudson Hawk in years.
Well, you should go watch Hudson Hawk tonight then.
So Dodge, they decided to do a little take on alchemy by calling this the Alchemy, of course, standing for the Hemi engine. This is based on the SRT 392. That's the 6.4 liter Hemi V8, naturally aspirated, 475 horsepower, if I remember correctly, 470 pound feet of torque. It's an appearance package only. They don't change the mechanicals. The appearance package, if you're turning lead into gold, then we're turning yellow into excitement, I guess, on this, because you get some special.
Your PR hat on there, man.
I'm working on it. You get some special striping, black accent stripes with yellow trim on the sides. Of course, you got to have yellow brake calipers. Those are behind black 20-inch wheels. There's more yellow and carbon accent trim inside. They change up the grill a little bit. They're going to build 1,000 of these. 250 in each of four colors. And I use the term colors loosely because the four colors offered for the 392 Alchemy
are
black, white, and two shades of gray. So it's like technically non-colors. except for the yellow. You've got
two shades of black. You're kind of like, what are you doing, guys? Two shades of gray.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they're going to build 250 in each color. It's going to add $3,995 to the sticker price, which really isn't that, it's not that big of a bump, but I mean, you'll probably run into dealer markups.
Right. But we are expecting this not to be the last call Durango.
Oh, no. No, Dodge already said in this announcement, they said, hey, this is the first of many to come as we celebrate this throughout the year. They did confirm that there will be some sort of last call for the Durango Hellcat.
Yes.
And furthermore, they said that there will be a 2025, at least one 2025 model year Durango last call model, whatever that's going to be. We don't know. It's not going to be a next generation.
Right. No, it's going to be this generation.
Wouldn't that really be something, Bruce? I mentioned it just for fun in the post, because Dodge, I found it very, very interesting that they were specific in saying this will include the Hellcat at some point. And there will be a 2025, it'll extend into the 2025 model year. Wouldn't that be something to create like a Durango 170 with that 1,000 horsepower version?
It's
pure 1,000% speculation, complete speculation here.
Yeah, this is, we know they have the engine. We know they have the vehicle. We don't know that they fit together, but theoretically, if you can put it in a Challenger, it shouldn't be that much harder.
It shouldn't be a challenge to put it in the Durango. Oh,
very good. Wah, very good. Wah, wah. No, not a wah wah. That's pretty good.
This news just dropped.
No, but and the other thing is, much like the Charger and the Challenger, we are going to be having last call editions
all year long.
Knows what last call means exactly. Last call is supposed to be the last drink of the night, but they just extend it out over 365 or more days. So
yep. So it's the next last call of the last
exact
call. Last call. More to come. Point being on the last call. It starts here, and it'll end somewhere with a Hellcat. And that also means the last Dodge Hellcat vehicle will be a Durango SUV. Did you ever see that coming 5 years ago?
Nope. I didn't.
Let's time travel now.
Back to 19. Well, 1977, really. 1976, if you happen to be an insider, but for most folks, 1977.
So, and Bruce, you get all the credit on this because I did a lot of the work on the Mustang. This is yours, and it's super awesome. Yeah. I can't wait to hear you talk about it.
Yeah. So I obviously, this story came together before I knew I had to get rid of my Z, but you have a drink at night, you start looking up old cars that you own, and you start learning more about them. And there is a very old Atari game called Night Driver, which I thought was kind of the first-person driving game. It turns out that it is, and maybe it isn't. So at the 1976, let me get this name right, Amusement and Music Operators Association show, that Night Driver was there. That was from Atari, and the company Midway, which I think a lot of people know. Midway did, they did Mortal Kombat.
They did a lot of games.
They did NBA Jam. They did, if you were a 90s kid that played video games, you probably heard of Midway. They came up with this game originally called Midnight Driver. Midnight Racer. So you had Night Driver and Midnight Racer. And things happened. Their parent company ended up getting the rights to the Datsun 280Z. So in 1977, an arcade comes out, or arcade game comes out called 280 Zap, ZZZAP. And I want to show that to you right now. And this is a video I did not put in the story because the person who's doing it is talking over it the whole time. And
it's always weird when someone's talking over a video, but this is the best look at the game that I have found. And then I'm going to show you in just a second how modern emulators make it look, and it's night and day. So,
and while you're doing that, I mean, let me just say, when you first posted about this in our team's chat, I was like, dude, that's Night Driver. I mean, I never had the game, but I remember from my very, very early years, seeing it for Atari and just being like, oh, that's cool. It's like you're driving a car from the point of view of the car.
Right.
And so, it was also super simple. It's like a black screen with white dots basically that outline the road and they just move back and forth. I mean, it's old school gaming at its finest. But then when you said, okay, dots in 280 zap, it's like, what? That's Night Driver.
But it's not. And so here we're looking at it here. And so, and I'll show you in just a second. The only thing that are actually a video game that we're looking at is the little lines on the road and the instrument panel. So I'm going to actually go back here a second. Again, this is why I didn't put this video into the story, because the guy doesn't present it well. But when he does present it, it looks fantastic because you can see the painted background and the nose of the car at the same time. And so as he shows on this thing, there is a steering wheel. There is a 2-speed gear shift, high, low, and an accelerator pedal. There's no brake. Apparently in this world, brakes don't exist, but
don't need brakes.
You've got this painted nose of a 280Z. You've got this painted background of clouds that make it look like dusk. And you've got this faux wood surround for the instruments, and you would drive the car through that. And again, this is 1977. And to put that into perspective, Space Invaders, which is what kind of a lot of people consider like one of like the foundational video games, that's 1978. So that's a year after this ever came out. And now I'm going to show you, now that you've seen this, what this looks like on a modern emulator, because they can't emulate the wood grain instrument panel or the nose of the car or the background. And it changes absolutely everything. It's a completely different experience. So let me throw this up here.
And I just find it fascinating because, I mean, I'm a gamer too. I enjoy modern games and I have a lot of retro stuff, a lot of classic stuff. And I never knew this existed. And I always thought, okay, I'm pretty good when it comes to older games. And I never knew this existed.
So here's exactly the same game.
Listen to that.
But it's different.
And that totally looks like Night Driver to me.
Yes.
That totally looks like Night Driver. Yep.
And so I wrote about that one more real quick. And Ted Adam Green, I want to get to your comment because you're absolutely right, because that actually what you're talking about did a very similar thing. But let me do theater mode. Here is another view. This guy doesn't present it quite as well, but you can still see the wood surround for the instruments. You can see the sticker for the car that, you know. So if you ever happen to see 280 Zap in an arcade, play it because it's
play
such
the
a cool
hell
presentation.
Out of it. And then take pictures with your phone and email us podcast@motorone.com. And then email chris.smith@motorone.com. Tell me where it's at because I want to buy it. I don't collect big console games.
Had a similar presentation, and he's absolutely right, because on Space Invaders, they put a gradient color pattern. That was not actually the game. The game, the very, very, very first version of Space Invaders was black and white, and it was just the gradient on the screen that gave things colors. And then eventually they did come out slightly later with a color version because the game proved so popular. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That was another just purely black and white game where the graphics, literally the graphics they put on the screen is what made the colors be there. So
just cool stuff.
I want to write about more old video games. I've got some pitches in mind. Haven't written any of those stories yet, but yeah, just something that really interests me And kind of want to go from there. Smith, I should be back and be able to pull out some toys next week. So I think I might have some stuff for your series.
Nice. I'm a little, I'm sort of in between some things right now, trying to decide what to write next. And I mean, news has picked up just a little bit with all of the sales stats coming in with CES. But yeah, more to come, hopefully in the toy series. Super good job on the 280s app. I think that's fantastic.
Oh, it was so fun. It was so fun to research. It was so fun to write. There was all sorts of things I couldn't put into the story. Midway is the company that distributed the actual arcade cabinets. This company called Dave Nutting and Associates is the company that actually programmed the game. It turns out Dave Nutting was the designer of the Jeep Cherokee when he worked at AMC. So there is a direct reference between this game and the Jeep Cherokee.
Wait. Are we playing 6 degrees of 280Z right now?
Basically, yeah. Like you could play.
How cool is that? Where else are you going to get that than rambling about cars?
And I just wasn't able to put it in the story. There are all sorts of fascinating stories there. So it was super fun to look into, super fun to write. And I want to write more stuff like that because I enjoy it.
Very cool. I want to read more.
Yep. I think that's going to be our show though for tonight. Smith, do you have anything you've got coming up on Motor One that you want to plug? Any of like your own series or stories or
features? I mean, not really. I'm doing more work on the toy stuff. Hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have something new up there. We are doing a lot more. I mentioned this last week at Motor One. We are doing a lot more features like everything yes, we knows where we're presenting vehicles that are coming soon, usually with a rendering of how we think they're going to look with the information. We have a lot more of those in the pipeline. So please, MotorOne.com, keep an eye on that. We have
some one this week for the Aston Martin Valhalla.
Which is been a long time coming, but it looks like it's finally actually about to get here. So yeah, MotorOne.com, go check that out. I'm making progress on my side project, Scale Model Rescue. Basically teaching myself how to make and produce video. I really want to make this look really good because I have a lot of content that I'm really excited to bring to life. And I'm finally starting to get that dialed in. And when I have some of that dialed in, you know, I'm going to mention it here.
Yeah. And you're doing some more Motor One stuff. You're going to be traveling soon. So
I'm going to be out next week. So in a couple weeks, I'll talk about that. I don't want to really mention any details right now.
You're traveling. Like that's not breaking.
I'll be out and about a little bit next week. They usually let me out about once or twice a year. So we'll jump out just as I'm getting hit with about 2 feet of snow here in northern lower Michigan.
That's the right time to go. Thank you so much for everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We just love the fact that you guys listen to us, whether you're watching us live and commenting along, whether you're downloading the audio show, whether you're, joining us on YouTube after, Friday after a long night of work and you want to join us there, whatever it is, we enjoy it. So thank you so much. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.